Welcome to the Shabbat hour and a half of Yada Yah Radio. My good pleasure to be with you. Is that Larry, you in the 904?
That would be me. Yep.
That would be you. Okay, we don't have JB tonight. He got a call from his brother-in-law who needed some counsel. So JB is doing the family thing. But I'm delighted to be with you. It was fun to talk to you, even if it was ever so briefly, on Shattering Myths earlier today.
Yeah, and I have just been buried at work. We kind of changed the format of the way we're doing things, so I'm a lot busier on the phone than I used to be. So I'm that's why I'm kind of MIA there.
Well, you know, if busier is more prosperous, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
That's good. Yeah. I'm happy for you. So let you know if I sound a little bit hyped and out of breath. Home we have in California, we're trying to sell. It's been showed on an average of about three times a week here for a while. We had a showing where the client arrived 40 minutes late because Joe Biden is in town trying to raise money here at a fundraiser, and there's motorcades and streets closed down for the man who holds the most meaningless job in the world. And so it was all I could do to leave the property so they could show it and then get back in time to do the show. But it all worked out perfectly. You all, in the previous Shabbat programs, I returned to Mizmor Psalm 119.
And, yeah, we got about one verse into it, and then we had about seven people on the line, and we just had a family discussion, basically. So we didn't get very far.
Which, by the way, is what we have done the last three Shabbat. I edit where we are and put a note as to where to return each time, and what I have found is for the 3 weeks that I did the program with you prior to you doing the two, we made our way through one passage and then had a family discussion. No one's going to be disappointed then if I pick up with the two verses that are perhaps my favorite two in Psalm 119, which is kind of where we were back a while ago.
Okay.
All right. For those who are following along, I'm going to start at 119:43. And the reason I like this one is the first one. Every time I read it, I just think of Larry. I would like to be in the position where I quote Yahweh verbatim more than I do. And the medium that I use, of course, when I'm writing, of course, that's all I do. You know, you quote Yahweh and you comment on what he said. You read what he said and you think about it and you say, oh, this is what this means and this is how it's related and what it could what also it could convey. But when you're doing the radio thing, it's much harder just to sit there and have the right citation. It's a lot easier, and maybe even more fluid, to do sort of what Yahusha did throughout his testimony, which is to accurately convey God's intent without necessarily directly citing each passage. But you're particularly good at having the right passage, and I think it's because you get so much practice in it in your Facebook experience.
Yeah, can I mention something before you get started? There was a sort of a dust up in the group called Questioning Paul, because there was a religious initiate in there, and she was, of course, a follower of Christ and Jesus.
Oh. And then she was Torah
observant. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, then she was Torah observant, right?
Didn't give a damn about Yahweh's words.
Wait a minute. How could you be a follower of the Messiah of Yahusha, and when he's the living embodiment of Yahweh's words, if you don't give a damn about Yahweh's words?
Well, she didn't. Not
possible. I mean, that's just not possible.
I know.
And how could you be a follower of someone who was resolutely Torah observant if you're not Torah observant?
Well, she even made the statement, he didn't teach the Torah. I said, what do you mean he lived the Torah? Otherwise, he wouldn't have been the Messiah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I laid it right out there.
When the fellows asked, hey, how could we have assurance that we would go to heaven? And he answered by saying, why are you asking me? Why don't you read the Torah?
Exactly.
And then when the guys to Emmaus were clueless as to who he was, and he explained who he was, didn't he explain who he was by illustrating the Torah?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she went so far as to say he didn't teach the Shabbat. No, he was a living Shabbat. What do you mean he didn't? He didn't
so,
teach.
So
it.
When
he
the
observed Shabbat
account,
every
yeah.
seventh day. You know.
Yeah. So when the eyewitness account said begins, it says as was his custom on the Shabbat, he went and read the scrolls.
Right.
So that part of her Christianity evidently is that's a this giant wall that is a difference between Yahusha and her make-believe God.
Yeah, and further went on to say that questioning Paul is akin to questioning Mose. And, you know, anyway, I jumped in there with both feet. I laid it down, you know, and for another thing, it's real simple.
Now, by the way, let me just, can I interrupt you here one moment?
Yeah,
and I know you're just saying what she said, so I'm not arguing with you in any way here.
No,
we are in complete agreement. But for that point to be true, then Yahusha, who specifically referenced Moshe and specifically gave great credibility to Moshe, in fact, it, at times even said, listen, if you don't read and consider and trust Moshe, then there is nothing I can do for you. Remember the guy that, you know, was in hell and wanted help, and he says, listen, if your family doesn't consider Moshe, then there is literally nothing I can do for you. It's not going to help
I
you.
I thought of that, yeah.
Okay, so here is Yahusha saying that Moshe is a spokesperson for Yahweh. And you know the book that Yahusha quotes from the single most?
Dabarim. Deuteronomy.
Yeah, Dabarim. Yep, yeah. Dabarim. By far, more than any other
words.
Book, he cites from Dabarim, but he also cites extensively from
Yahusha Yahu.
Right.
Yeah,
so since Yahusha cited more than anything else from the Torah, and since he said that if you don't understand the Torah, you can't understand him, and that he's not going to do any good, and since his only mentions of Paul were to call him a wolf in sheep's clothing, a false apostle, and a liar.
And warn that anybody who came and said they'd been with him was a liar.
Right. So how is it then that you could put them on the same plateau if you're a follower of Yahusha? Unless you're absolute complete nincompoop.
You couldn't, and it absolutely put me through the roof. And I called her down for it. I said, you know, you're religious filth, you're garbage, you're boring in religion. Don't throw this thing. You know, you don't believe a word of Yahweh.
You are so far from the truth Yeah, that you would be better off if you recognized that you are filth.
From the family attack me for just blatantly laying it out to her.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, when somebody... First of all, they don't believe the Torah, they don't care about his name, and they don't even see the teachings.
Hey, Larry, when
Yahusha...
I have
Yahusha, no more use for him.
Right,
you know,
when Yahusha... and by the way, I am sorry for those who have been deceived. I am not sorry for those who deceive. This woman,
I'm not sorry for those when you lay the facts out in front of their face and they go, well, I'm staying with religious tradition.
Or then have nothing to just walk away from them. You know, there's three different ways you can respond to people. Yahusha, when he confronted someone who was articulating religious lies, as was this woman. Now, she is a deceiver
because she was
going and condemning what Yahusha represents and representing Paul. So she's in that camp that Yahusha had many encounters with, and he never sought them. He never went out of his way to condemn them, but any time that they confronted him, that they shared a lie in his presence, what did he do?
Well, he went off on them. Yeah,
right.
I mean, she was into OTNT. I could question your OT people, your OT people. So you're at war.
By the way, I don't have an OT. And I don't have people, but Yahweh has testimony, and he proved that he articulated the testimony that we find in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. But in your defense, not that you need defending, but in your defense, when it comes to individuals, there are three types of individuals that there are more than that. But I mean, there's the kind of person that comes to you and is genuinely interested in knowing. What did Yosha do when somebody like Nicodemus came and said
he shared the truth with him?
Right. But by the way, while he was sharing the truth with Nicodemus, did he also chide him a bit?
Yeah,
he answered the question. Yeah, he did. He did. He says, why are you asking me? You're supposed to be a teacher of the Torah. And you're asking me a question that's blatantly explained in the Torah. Why are you asking me this question? So he did, even though he answered the question for Nicodemus, he chided him, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Why do you think, Yosha, before we move on to the next group of people, because the first is somebody who is genuinely open, genuinely interested in knowing Yahweh, why do you think that Yosha chided him before he answered the question?
Because it was blatantly obvious. The answer was obvious.
It was, but that's part of the answer.
Well, beyond that, I'm not sure why.
Okay. You know. Yahweh went to great trouble, personal time and energy, to not only reveal the Torah, but to live out the Torah before his people, to prove the Torah. He went to a great extent to prove that he authored his Torah. And the promises in his Torah required a tremendous sacrifice on behalf of our Father to enable. The Torah should never be treated lightly. The Torah is the single most valuable thing in the universe. I'm not going to just say document. The Torah is the single most precious gift in the universe. And what the reason I think that Yosha chided the man who came to him for answers and was open to the answers and was in opposition at that moment to religion is that when you consider how much Yahweh had to give of himself to give us the Torah, because it's just not him reciting it. He had to go get some really scummy people out of a really scummy place. He had to take 70 days to share every aspect of it with Moshe. And then he included promises in it that required him to allow himself to be crucified and then to spend time in Sheol for us. If somebody is going to give you that marvelous of a gift and you're not even willing to consider it, you're too lazy, you want God to give you a personal answer when this gift is right there before you, and it costs God so much
weak.
To give it to you.
That's pretty weak.
Wouldn't you, if you were God, be a little ticked?
Yeah, absolutely.
He was a little ticked.
You know,
I don't know
it's
if you can
all
say
so good.
Can I say that about God, that God was a little ticked? I don't know. We'll have to ask the censor.
Well,
I think
I'm sure
can.
He was. You know,
I think
and not
can.
Only that, but you had people like Yasha, Yod, and Zachariah that they killed. They killed him. And what
right.
were they doing? They were getting his words out.
Right.
So these are people Yahweh knows that were murdered getting
right.
those words out. Sometimes
right.
that's more upsetting than getting hurt yourself.
He
you
allowed
know?
His physical body, though, to be murdered by men to enable these promises. And so I think it's really important that we know that even for the most open-minded person who has walked away from religion, while Yahweh was willing to answer his questions, he chided him first. And that's when somebody writes me and says, you know, can you summarize, I don't have the time to read a 3,000-page book or a 1,000-page book. Could you just summarize it for me? I said, no.
I've read Craig's stuff.
But more importantly, I won't. Do you think that if God could have summarized how to form a relationship with him and how to benefit from that relationship and could have summarized who he is, and what he is offering.
In a few paragraphs,
maybe in an executive summary in front of the book. Do you think he would have done so?
Sure he would have. Yeah.
Why do you think he didn't do it?
Well, because he's interested in people that are interested in investing the time with him.
Absolutely. And what's the best way on this planet for us to invest time with him?
Read his words.
Yeah, absolutely. Celebrate his words. Investigate his words, think about his words, share his words, live his words,
yep.
rely on his words, all that kind of stuff. And so that's why he chided Nicodemus. Okay, so Nicodemus is one kind of individual. You spend a lot of time with individuals who come to you and say, you know, I'm open to knowing the truth and have acknowledged that there's problems in religion And you would be right if you chided them a little bit. And
well,
the best example
don't.
For us to follow
I don't.
Is Yahusha, right?
I actually don't. Those kind of, I don't.
Okay.
I do.
Now, there's a place where I do. I chide them a bit because, and the reason I chide them is I think similarly to the mindset of Yahusha, which is that if I just give you the answer, if I personalize the answer for you, I'm going to shortchange this for you. The thrill is in the discovery.
Yeah, but then again, he was talking to a guy who was pretty well learned in the Torah, should have been.
Yes.
And you know, so many times we're talking to people who aren't.
That's true.
And
okay.
You know,
right.
They're not in
okay.
the situation Nicodemus was in. So yeah. I take that into account.
I would.
What
agree
I won't
and,
do,
and even in
is
that
once
account,
I share words,
right,
is have them trashed.
Right.
Look,
so if you, for example, say that Torah means teaching and guidance, and Yahweh, yeah. God's name is Yahweh, that's his one and only name, mm-hmm. and that he has but one covenant, and then you take a moment and you explain how you know those things, if they continue to refer to Torah as law, if they continue to use the concept of obey, if they use Lord rather than Yahweh, and if they speak of a New Testament or a new covenant after you have shared the truth and affirmed the truth.
Yeah, really emphasized it, then we're done.
We're done, right?
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
We're looking for thousands out of billions. I mean,
correct.
This is not somebody just walks in and accidentally gets it. I mean,
correct.
It doesn't work like that.
Okay, so we're on the same page there, and you're on the same page that Yahusha was on. Now, there's the second group of people. The second group of people are those that are still have one foot in religion, there's still one foot in politics, one foot in political patriotism. You know, they know there's a problem, they really haven't left these things, but they're at least open to a discussion. And I think those people you treat very much the same way. You really do go over, you know, you try to say, I'll point you in the right direction. I'm not going to give you all the answers, but I'll point you in the right direction. I'll give you a framework from which you can go and begin this discovery. And as you invest the time to go on this discovery, I'm available to you. Here's my email. You fire me questions as you go along. That's the second group. They've been deceived by religion, but they're beginning to question it. The third group is they are deceived by religion. They're not trying to promote their religion, but they're into it big time. My approach with them, and maybe the same as yours, is I don't pay them any attention at all. I don't try to help them. I don't reach out to them. I don't witness to them. I just ignore them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now,
that's what I
now maybe I've done that because I've dealt with 10,000 emails from religious people who, you know, are just lost in the religion.
You find out it's a worthless waste of time. That's all
it is. It's a worthless waste of time.
Yeah,
time
right.
is valuable. Now, I understand that time in eternity won't have the same value maybe that this time has. You know, in some ways it'll have more value because we're going to be right there with Yahweh. We're going to be able to do things that we can't even imagine now, and we're going to be able to extend time. But right now our time does have value because we've got very little of it left to reach as many people as are open to Yah's message. Now, the third group, or the fourth group, is the person that you talk to. They come to a site that is professing the truth about Yahweh, professing the truth about Paul, sharing what Yahweh had to say about Paul, and they claim to be a follower of Jesus or of Christ, and yet just are complete ignoramus. You have to be either ignorant or irrational to take the position. Every one of the positions she took is based on ignorance and rationality. Now, with that kind of a person, I think it is appropriate to at least once or twice try to say, just as you brought up those points, to give the quick answer and say, well, if you can't be a follower of Christ, if you don't know his actual title, if you don't know that wasn't his name, if you aren't Torah observant, because he was Torah observant, and if you say that to her, and then she fires back some, no, he never taught the Torah. And you say, well, let me give you some examples. And then she bypasses that, and you say, all right, you know, to condemn Paul is just like condemning Moses. And you explain, well, no, that's not the case. Let me tell you why. And at that point she fires back, then you just say, you know, go away. You're worthless. You're a worthless
human being.
Well,
I probably have something a little harsher to say, because I take it as a personal insult. I mean, if you lump Mose in with Paul, that's
yeah.
a giant insult to the family. It's a total insult.
Yeah,
it's like comparing him to a child molester, as far as I'm concerned. And frankly, I'm pissed at that point.
Yeah,
and they're going to get it from me.
And I'm going to tell you that your response is the same as Yahusha's. When somebody promotes religion, every time they did it in front of Yahusha, he not only criticized their answer, he condemned them.
Mm-hmm.
He'd go so far to say, you are nothing but a brood of vipers. I mean, that, you can't say anything worse than that.
Yeah. Paul bragged about being raised by these vipers.
Oh, yeah, and he would say that,
doesn't mean a thing to him.
Right. Yeah, Yahweh would say, you know, you are not my children. You are forsaken. I look at you as if you had dung spirit on your faces. So, you know, God is, you know, and these Jesus idiots that will all say, oh, you're not being like Jesus. Oh, yeah, I'm being exactly like Yahusha. Too bad you don't know his name. But every time that he was confronted by a religious person, this is exactly how he responded. You just don't know that I'm representing him and you're the enemy.
Yeah, well, she was in there being a total enemy to the family.
Right.
And then several people from the family sided with her. And it just blew me away. I'll tell you what I did. I blocked them.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, we've got nothing left to talk about. I mean,
yeah,
really.
That's sad when those who know better try to take the side of somebody that is promoting a lie.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily taking her side, but saying, you are way too harsh. You know, like we're all supposed to hold hands and sing kumbaya, and I'm not going to do it.
I will tell you that the only difference probably in this between you and me is that once I started doing the radio thing, I realized that I could no longer take it personally. That if I took it personally, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean,
and so I think the approach that I have taken that may be more beneficial long term there is to when you have somebody and you've gone through what you did, where they made a stupid statement, you responded and contradicted their statement. You did what Yahusha did. They made another stupid statement, you did that. They made another stupid statement, you appraise them of the truth, and they make another stupid statement. Then at that point it is appropriate to say, you know, you're worthless. You're worse than worthless. You're
working on the other team.
Right.
You're counterproductive.
You are poison. Right. You are spouting the plague of death. You are not someone that should ever be exposed to anyone, much less the family. The best thing that you could possibly do at this very moment is just to shut up and go away. You have no value with God. You have no value with me. You have no merit whatsoever as an individual. Go, and if they're not willing to go away, you just block them. And then
your thing, when they come up, when they start talking idiocy to you, I've seen you do it. You just cut them off on the radio.
Yeah.
I'm done with you. I'm on to the next.
Yeah.
And then
there was one person on Shattering Myths that I didn't do that with. He kept on saying stupid stuff. I kept on answering. He kept on repeating the stupid stuff. I kept on answering. And he did it. I did cut him off after about the third time. And I got mad. I lost my cool with him.
Right.
And I felt so bad about having done that, because that's the ultimate no-no in radio, is letting a caller get to you, that I promised myself I'd never do it again, that I'll give somebody two or three times. If the third time you're going to be an idiot, there is a disconnect button on that switchboard, and I hit it.
Yeah, there is.
And just with you can D whatever you do on Facebook, but deactivate someone's ability to communicate.
Yeah, just to hear a family member say to me, you got foul with somebody. Foul? I got foul? foul is using terms like grace and Jesus and faith. Now, that's
right.
foul.
Right.
You know. But and we need to stand up and we need to do that. And I just wanted to clarify that. I'm not some hateful guy. I care enough about the truth to share it.
Right.
And I know a lot of other people do, too.
Yeah. When Yahweh says that he is a jealous God, does jealousy not incorporate into the very concept the potential of anger?
Yep. Yeah, sure does.
And anger, and God very often displays his wrath, his animosity. Yahweh is angry when people corrupt his plan, his way, his message, his covenant, his testimony, his name, because of the consequence of other people. The people who are doing it, he is angry at because of the consequence of what they do. It isn't inappropriate for you to be angry at them. But I think that because of the sensitivity of others, you probably want to stop after you've expressed your disdain, and by just saying the person's worthless. In fact, I wish they were only worthless. They're actually counterproductive. This person is spewing the plague of death. They are infectious.
Right.
And they're
poison.
They're cancerous. They're malignant.
Poison.
Yeah,
exactly.
This person is malignant. They're carrying a deadly poison. And therefore, they're banned from this discussion.
About the last person I want to deal with is a religious person. I'll tell you that. You can't get through to them. You can have private discussions with them one-on-one. I've done it. And then, sure enough, 2 weeks later, they're right back to Lord and Amen. I'm not kidding.
Right.
And you sit there and go, we've been through all this. And I believe me, I have them message me. And I don't answer them.
Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of time sharing with you, and then I see these things go by. The Lord said, and the Lord is blessing Israel. Oh, stop it. You know.
Yeah.
You're not
by the way, Yahweh is not currently blessing your Israel.
No, he's not.
He's going to.
We know that.
He's going to.
He will.
But
in the end, there's a lot of pain in between then and then.
Oh,
you know.
Man. You know, I'm on Yeshaya 17 and 18, you know, I'm presenting on Shattering Myths. And so what I decided to do is that after the whole thing, I just took all of it, every statement, and took them out of the amplified mode and just put in the bold. This is the flow of the discussion. And then based upon that, I've got another document open, which I'm writing, you know, as I went through the statements, of course, with every statement, I would try to comment and explain it and say, this is what this means, and this is why this is profound, and the like. But at the end, I thought I would just do a complete narrative of everything that God shared with us and what it means. And as I go through it and just writing this narrative, looking at the flow of the words, I want to tell you what Israel is going to endure after they are severed and after we're gone is going to be excruciating.
Okay.
They're going to be inundated. I did a calculation. I went to all the Islamic countries because God says it's going to be a multitude of countries and there's going to be this vast multitude of individuals from a multitude of countries that are going to flood into Israel. And so I looked at every single country on earth and I calculated the percentage that are Muslims and the number of Muslims in each of those countries. And then identified them as the countries that where the majority was a Muslim and where a significant minority was Muslim, and where they had a meaningless Muslim population, but still nations to consider. And did the calculation based upon what you know about fundamentalist Islam and peer pressure and clerics and the media and politicians and the like in each of these countries. And then did the math as to how many Muslims are going to flood into Israel during the Magog War, right after we're gone. And the number I came up with is between 130 and 200 million. Now, just think of that. There's only, 7 million? 6 to 7 million? A little over 6 million?
In the country. Yeah.
In the whole country? And that tiny little country is going to be flooded with over 100 million jihadists? Think of that. I mean, enraged, screaming, Allahu Akbar, stinky, ugly, moronic, vicious. Oh, I mean, I just can't even imagine that plague. It's worse than the plague of a billion locusts.
You're talking about a lot of pain in between now and then, and that's what everybody doesn't get. It's easy for us to sit in our air-conditioned homes with food and showers and movies to entertain ourselves or whatever. But when it gets down to that seven-year tribulation period, it isn't going to be like that anymore.
No.
And you know, you're talking about going days without food, family
Correct.
Members dying. You're talking about plagues. You're talking about
Right.
filth. You're talking
Yep.
about living in submission. It's going to be a horrible place to be on this planet.
One of my favorite emailers, and I apologize for the, you know, when you get old, you forget names from time to time. But one of my favorite emailers sends me just kind of insights from time to time. And you're talking about these plagues, and it reminds me of one he sent me in the last few days. And he was watching Cosmos, which is the History Channel's presentation or Discovery, one of them's presentation of the history of the universe and the conception of life. And on this show, they talked about there have been five annihilation events thus far in human history, five of them, where almost all life was wiped out. Okay?
Like asteroids hitting the planet.
Most all of them are asteroids. But five major extinction events on planet Earth. And I just thought about it for a moment and said, five, huh? Well, when Apophis strikes and the volcanic mountains slide into the sea.
That's going to be number six.
That is going to be number six, isn't it? That's right in the middle of the tribulation. And
Yahweh
returns and he's not dialed down, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
There's number seven, isn't it?
Yeah, that or you could look at the nuclear war during the Magog War. I mean,
but the difference is that
pretty...
one's man bringing it on himself.
That
nuclear exchange is simultaneous with the asteroid strike and with the...
Oh, you're just talking about an event that would would change the parameters of everything, period.
Right. Yeah, the first aspect of the Magog War, one out of four people die, and the second aspect of it, which includes the asteroid strike and the, I think it's actually two mountains, by the way, that are going to fall into the sea. Both of them probably triggered by the asteroid strike. We all know the mountain off of Spain, which it's just a matter of time before it falls into the sea. It's a volcanic mountain. It's exactly as Yahweh describes it. And it'll be a 500 foot of water traveling at 500 miles an hour that's going to race across the Atlantic and wipe out almost all of
the Florida is not the place to be.
Florida is not the place to be under that circumstance. But nor is Boston, nor is New York, nor is Washington, D.C. There is a second mountain that... in the last year has fallen 10 feet. And the other side of this particular island where these volcanic mountains are, about 2,000 years ago, they did the same thing. They fell about 10 feet, and then, whoosh, they all fell into this giant landslide that left this cliff on the side of a seaborne volcano that created a similar tsunami about 1,000 years ago. Well, in the last
year, where's that at?
The other side of this volcanic island has fallen 10 feet in the last year. It's Kilauea.
Oh,
Kilauea's
it's over
on
the Pacific
it's on
side.
The, yeah, it's on the Mauna Kea side, the eastern side of the big island of Hawaii. Do you know what's across the sea from Kilauea?
California.
Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego.
That's Mexico. Bad news.
Bad
yeah,
news.
That's a
yeah,
lot
gonna
of people.
They're going to get it from both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people just got to understand, this isn't a game. It isn't a matter of tolerance and holding hands and loving. That's the nonsense they do in churches.
Yeah, it is a matter of kumbaya, but it isn't a matter of any of this other stuff. And in the tribulation... ain't going to be pretty. And everything, by the way, thus far that I have read, that Yahweh through Yahshayah has to say about the tribulation, everything is natural or man-made. There's not a single act of God save one. Only one. And the of this very pretty comprehensive presentation of the tribulation.
Is that where he nudges Apophis?
No, that's not in. It's not in in Yahshayah 17. Nope, it's he sends his spirit to blow away these 100 million Islamic jihadists.
Oh, yeah, right there in the Magog War,
But that's in Yahshayah 17, that he blows them away with his spirit. That's his intervention. The rest of the time he says, you know, I'm just going to spend up here in heaven. You all can do whatever you wish to do to this planet. I'll come back and pay attention to it when it's my time. But between now and then, he makes this very specific point that he is not micromanaging, that he's not judging. You know, that idiot pastor from Kansas that said that God was killing American troops because America favored homosexuality.
I don't even know.
The God of the Torah and the prophets does not bring harm upon men, with very rare exceptions. He did during the Exodus, and he will during the Magog War, and he will upon his return. But this idea of God judging nations and intervening in human events and causing harm to individuals, that's the opposite of what he says in the prophecy. In the prophecy, he makes it really clear that once he's done his thing, he's going to hang out with his family in heaven. And he's not going to show back up until it's time. Yep, and the other thing that was so interesting, and then we'll get back to the psalm here, Larry.
By the way, that's refreshing. That's the real Yahweh. Mr. Kansas isn't alone. It was a bunch of Islamic imams out in over in Indonesia was talking about the tsunami there because there was homosexuality. Yeah. You know that, right?
Oh yeah. Well, when the 2004 tsunami occurred, they were saying that it's because of Christianity and because of homosexuality, and they were blaming Allah for the tsunami. Man blames God for everything bad that happens to him. One of the two interesting things I found there's a thousand interesting things in that particular prophecy, but two of those that I really had not considered is that first, they both reinforce something that we knew to be true, but the one that was, I thought, just so interesting, which I've just mentioned, which is that once Yahweh harvests his family. There's 7,000 members of his family that show up that he actually perfectly brings together and takes home. That once God does that, that he turns his attention to us and he spends quality time with us. And he says, you know, I'm going to be here as bright and as warm as the fire, as close as the dew to my family. That's what I'm here to do. And so that's the real Yahweh. That's him exactly as we know him. And then the other thing is that after Yahweh goes to great lengths to say that he will rescue his children, and these are now naturally born children. These are Yehudim, that he's going to rescue his children from America. And that right before he does so, he explains that he is what the consequence is for those in America, in particular, that he did not save. And he says that in essence, that the demons of Sheol are going to be tormenting them. And the way that the demons are going to be tormenting them is to say, hey, you thought you were so high and mighty. You thought you were such a big shot. And now look at you. Now look at you, big shot. You're down here with us.
And saying to him, how are you so stupid to fall for
how
this?
Are you
so,
that's exactly it. He says, and he presents it as that they're going to die, and then he's going to rouse them from their sleep, and then for all eternity, they're going to be harassed by the very spirits that they allied with, who's going to say, okay, big shot, how could you have been so stupid? You thought you were so smart, and now look at you. You're an idiot. So, I mean, I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to see the place. But that's how I always envisioned Sheol being. And
well, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that a man can't take a bunch of letters from another man and invent a religion. You know, once somebody shows you that, when I was 15 years old, had somebody shown me this is how the New Testament was invented,
yeah,
okay, I would have said, you got to be kidding. At 15.
Yeah. Yeah.
At 15. Now, with the knowledge I have today, knowing exactly how they did it, and then after the fact, putting in the actual disciples and then copy editing to death what they said, I would just, you know, you can show it to people until you're blue in the face. That's what I would say.
Jewish priests came up with it, you know, with that what should be included and what shouldn't.
No, you tell me. I don't know.
Yes, actually, this is one of the few things they actually got right. No, they actually got this one right. They wouldn't say it, but was the name prevalent in the book? Did the statements in the book all prove out to be true? And was the nature of the testimony in the book consistent with the nature of the testimony in the Torah? If it was, then they considered it inspired and included it in their canon. If it wasn't, they either threw it out of their canon. For example, they threw Maccabees out. They threw Enoch out. They threw a bunch of books out, but they also threw they said there was two books which they just weren't sure about. And so we're going to tell you, they said right up front, we're going to tell you these two books we're not sure about. One was Ecclesiastes. The other was the Song of Solomon. The two books attributed to Solomon, they said, you know, not so sure about those. And you know something, Larry? I've been doing this now for, 10, 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
And I spend, you know, better part of 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, studying the words that Yahweh shared and having a great time with them. Do you know how many times in 7,000 pages of writings I have cited, I have been found something worth citing in either the Song of Solomon or Ecclesiastes?
Let me guess, zero.
Zero. Yeah. Not once. I don't think
that
there's
would
a
make
prophecy.
Sense because Solomon,
I don't think there's a prophecy in either book. I don't find anything nourishing in either book. I'm not here to tell you that neither book was inspired. But I can tell you that Ecclesiastes, there's much in it that's wrong. And so I just, but the rabbis, they knew that these two, they said, we're not going to hang our cloak on these. This is really questionable stuff. And then the others, they just discarded. And you end up with the same collection that we have. Because on everything that Yahweh inspired, it is blatantly obvious. It's filled with his name. The testimony is absolutely consistent. There's not a single contradiction. Every historical detail is accurate. And every prophecy is true. And there's always prophecy. So.
And that's the way to do it.
And that's the way to do it. Yeah. That's why, somebody can ask me a question right now on, what's in the Christian New Testament. And, you know, I'm going to look pretty stupid because I don't pay any attention to it. I don't study it. Don't think about it. Don't much care about it. There are some things that I like in it. I like the Instruction on the Mount.
Yeah,
I like the open letters that Yosha wrote. I like that stuff. I like the discussions that Yosha had where we have the context and the detail of the discussion, like on the road to Emmaus, like with Nicodemus, like in Matanyah 23 where he's given him the rabbis both barrels. And I love the Olivet Discourse where he's quoting Zechariah. There's some aspects, I don't want to give you wrong, but that I really enjoy. But beyond that, you can have a whole damn thing. I don't care. It means nothing to me. You know, I was going to write another book on Paul. That's why I called the series, the great, the specific book, the great Galatians book, and the series Questioning Paul. And I've since renamed it. I'm not doing another one. I'm just not going back there. You know, I mean, I guess if y'all were to say, hey, you know, it would really be a good thing if you would go back and do more. But God, I'd say, God, how many nails did we put in this coffin? You really want to put another 1,000 nails in the same daggone coffin?
You've burned it down, man. There's
oh,
no coffin
on.
Left.
We nailed it. We burned it. We buried it. But, you know, I have a good time debating with him like that. You know, if he ultimately wants it, of course, he's going to get his way, and I'm going to acquiesce because I'm a lot dumber than he is, and my time's a lot less valuable. But the fact of the matter is, most of what's there, I find repulsive. I don't care for it, and don't need it.
Well, you know, when you're in a debate with somebody about Paul, and he talks about hoping that the people that perform circumcision are all castrated, I mean, come on, how far does it have to go before you understand this guy's on the opposite team? And there's so many people that play ball for this guy. They've got every excuse under the sun. I have to ask myself, and I ask them, why do you think it was that Marcion chose Paul's letters to invent a new religion?
Yeah, because they were.
I mean,
for that
specifically,
purpose.
Yeah, that's what they were for. That's what they held.
That's what they do. Yeah, it's you know, one of the things I'm going to say one more thing before we turn to Psalm 119, and I know I keep on saying one more thing, but it's something that's reinforcing because we've had this discussion many times on this program, and this discussion is: did Yosha say anything that wasn't already made known in the Torah and prophets? Is there anything that you have to look to Yosha for that you wouldn't? You wouldn't have any ability to know without the Torah and the prophets. And I'd be willing to say, yeah, there's probably some things in Revelation, because he's trying to wrap up the whole thing for us. And one of the things in Revelation is if you talk to a messianic, they will they poo-poo the rapture. No rapture. Can't have a pre-tribulation rapture. And the open letter to the Philadelphians, Yahusha specifically says of them, that because you love my word and you love the Father's name, I'm going to keep you out of the time of the Great Tribulation.
Yeah, now they say that two Jesuits made that up. And, of course, those are the two that actually took the Greek and actually translated it. They claim Jesuits made that
now,
up.
Now, mind you, the problem with that, of course, is that the oldest extant copy of the first 15, 16 chapters of Revelation dates to the second or third century, long before there were Jesuits. But
I know, but they did go back and translate it. I mean,
but we've got a copy of it that predates the Jesuits by centuries, many centuries. So that's not possible. Now. That's like people saying that Daniel was written after the conquest of Alexander the Great and after the rise of Rome, and after Rome conquered the realm of Alexander, because it speaks too adroitly of the rise and fall of the Macedonian Empire and the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And so they say, well, it had to be written after that. And of course, then we have copies of Daniel.
Septuagint.
Not only Septuagint, but in the Dead Sea Scrolls that go back to 150 BCE. So, you know, you'd say, I'm sorry, but that lie won't fly. You'll have to try a different one. You know, thanks for playing, but, please sit down. Okay. So here's the point. Yosha said that his family, those who love his name and love his word, will be kept out of the Great Tribulation. Now, most, and then in the Olivet Discourse, he speaks of the timing of the harvest. He uses the term paralambano, which is that he brings us together. Paralambano means to gather together. It happens to be exactly the same word that Yahweh cited in Yeshayah 17, that he is going to bring us together and then harvest us. And so people will say, I'm sorry, there is no rapture. Well, there is no rapture, but there is a Teruah harvest. Okay, so I've got the term wrong. There's not one of those either, and it can't happen pre-trip. And they say, and then they'll all say, there is no evidence whatsoever for this in the Old Testament, in the Torah and prophets.
It's right there in Yasha Yahu. It says so.
Absolutely. I mean, in great detail. The timing of it, the nature of it, the quantity, who participates, where they come from, what
talks
makes
about
them
what
unique.
They do.
Yeah.
What they do, you know,
right.
that they're traveling with him on his couches and
right.
staying
no,
upright in his presence.
Right.
He even
yeah,
underscores
it's got,
upright.
Yeah, it's got everything about the harvest, but it also says that very specifically, the harvest is after Israel becomes vulnerable, but before the first terrorist begins this massive assault into Israel. So it's before the tribulation becomes a killing field. So every bit of what he told the Philadelphians, it's right there in Yasha Yahu. So it's one, just one more example of, and if I were a lot smarter than I am, if I had a lot more time than I did, my guess is that we would find that there isn't a single thing that Yasha told us that if we had the time and the intellect and the will, that we could, that we would find that same message is also articulated to us in the Torah and prophets. And it's the greatest of all these, by the way, for all of our listeners, and Larry, you know this, is that sometimes the devotees of the Christian New Testament will say, okay, I get the Torah thing, I get the feast, I get that Yahweh was the Savior, I get all this, but how would we even know that Yahusha did these things if it wasn't for the eyewitness accounts? And my response there, have you ever read Yasha Yah 53? Have you ever read Psalm 22? Have you ever read Psalm 88? They are vastly more detailed, more exacting eyewitness accounts than anything you'll find in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You don't need Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to have an eyewitness account of what occurred. It's right there in the prophets.
Yeah,
the
it's all there. Sure it is.
Yeah,
painstakingly. Talking about how he dies during a crucifixion and tongue cleaving to the
right.
roof of his mouth.
Right, heart melting inside of him. His joints
yeah, well, he was,
stretched.
And all those
broken.
Prophecies were fulfilled. it's amazing.
Now, I would tell you that while the fellow we're going to cite next, Dode, figured it out without having the year 33 eyewitness accounts and did it 1,000 years before that. I'm not so sure. In fact, I'm fairly certain that I would have had an enormous amount of difficulty understanding the details associated with Yosha's arrival in 33 CE and understand how the Psalms predict everything that he endured, as well as the prophets, and how that fits into the Torah. I'm kind of glad that I had the record, the eyewitness record, particularly of Matanyah and Yahochanan, and even the historical account presented by Luke. It certainly made the job of understanding easier. Is it necessary now? No, but it did make it easier. So
it made it a lot easier. A lot easier.
Yeah.
And
you would expect Yahweh to live us a written legacy of what he said and what he did, because what was the whole purpose of him showing up in person? Wasn't it to make understanding what he's offering and how we walk to him easier?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
To bring the light.
Right.
And even said to the Gentiles. He did say that.
Right.
You know,
to bring the word, to bring the light.
Yeah.
So he showed up to make it easier. That's why with Nicodemus, to go right back to where we started, with Nicodemus, once he said, you know, it's all there for you, you should know. But he answered his question. He's there to make it easier for us, to make understanding easier, to make knowing Yahweh easier, to make approaching Yahweh easier. to making understanding his Torah testimony easier. Now, easier is a relative term. He didn't come to make it easy, just easier.
Yeah, I mean, everybody still has a lot of effort to put in here. And you know, the efforts and the understanding, as you always say, connecting dots. I mean, we all do it. We all have to do it. But, I mean, you have to invest the time to do it. You can't just blow it off.
So let's begin to do some of that here and transition from Yashayah 17 into Psalm 119. One of my favorite statements is 43. So please, I don't know if I'm right in doing this, but this is what I do. When Dode is speaking, and he's speaking for himself, I don't read it as Dode saying this for himself. I read all of this as if it were me. It's personal for me. I feel comfortable making exactly the same request as what we're going to share right here, and I make it personal. And my sense is that Yah's really, really good with that. That he likes it when we take testimony like this and personalize it. Okay, so please do not ever take away from my mouth the word of your truthful, your unchanging and unwavering, your dependable, trustworthy and reliable, utterly capable, empowering and great, everlasting testimony. Because indeed, I am completely resolved to placing my trust in your words. I could live with that statement right there. I would love to manifest that statement. If every waking hour of my life were devoted to that statement, my life would have been meaningful. But you see the difference between reciting that as Dode's comment and reciting that as I'm talking directly to Yahweh here. I'm got a crutch here. I've got an aid. I'm using Dode's inspired words, but I think God intended for us to sing this song in first person. And so that happens to be one of the most powerful statements there is. My knowledge of Yahweh, my trust is in his words. And the only thing I don't want God to take away from me is his testimony. And I want his testimony to be in my mouth, because when my testimony is in my mouth, not am I saying the right things. I'm in the right place, and I'm doing something worthwhile. My life matters when this statement is true. Do not ever take away from my mouth the word of your truthful, your unchanging, your unwavering, your dependable, trustworthy, and reliable, utterly capable, empowering, and great, everlasting testimony. Because indeed, I am completely resolved to placing my total trust in your words. When you get to that spot, then a number of things happen. One is you stop worrying. Number two, you have utter and complete confidence. At that point, faith is irrelevant. There's nothing worthy to believe. At that point, you know. At that point, you're relaxed, you're comfortable. You're saying, you know, God, I love your testimony. I'm going to rely on your testimony. The rest is up to you. The rest is up to you. Now, I'm going to share your testimony. It's your job to help it resonate in those that you want to come to know you. Not mine. My job is to have your words be in my mouth. And your job is to make them resonate. Tell people here.
You know, one of the things you pointed out, Yada, several times, is that Yahweh doesn't really expect much of us on a personal level. He can't, you know. But he does expect us to take his words seriously. That's what he wants.
Yeah, that's why he cited Nicodemus.
And this is right. The exact opposite of religion. They pay no attention to his words, and they run around trying to please him with their personal abilities and kindness
right.
and heart.
And that what was a hypothetical metaphor, parable story with the young man in hell that pleaded with Yahusha to send someone to his family so they would not endure it. That's a
yeah. And he said, "I sent prophets.
That's
why they got to listen to you."
But that's why he said, you know, if you're not willing to listen to what I had to say in the Torah, I mean, you're not willing to listen to the prophets and to Moshe's testimony on behalf of Yah. Forget it. Not going to do any good. And why chided Nicodemus? It's when God goes to such great extent to make this relationship meaningful, beneficial for us, and all he's asking is for us to come to know him and rely on him, which means to observe his Torah guidance, and we're unwilling to do that, and we think we're so special that God has to give us his personal Cliff Notes shortened version just for our own personal benefit, because we're too damn lazy to study what he shared with all of us. There's something seriously wrong with that. And that kind of an individual is not going to endure themselves to Yahweh. If you don't enjoy studying Yahweh's testimony, you aren't going to enjoy heaven. You know, the woman who is managing the process of trying to get Shattering Myth syndicated. And let me once again say that you can email me at yada@yadayah.com, yada@yadayah.com, and I will introduce you to Jackie and would encourage you to be part of her team to help get Shattering Myth syndicated. But Jackie, prior to doing this job, has been among the scores of editors of Yada Yah, Questioning Paul, and Introduction to God. She has been the most devoted. I mean, she has edited every chapter 5, 6, 7 times. And, you know, every time I thank her for her devotion to it, she says, "Why are you thanking me? I love it." Now, she doesn't love it because of what I wrote. She loves it because she gets to read and spend time with Yahweh. It's enriching. It's empowering. It's enlightening. It's fun. And so what she is expressing is the kind of reaction we should all have. You know, this past month when I got back into translating again and said, you know, I'm tired with the Questioning Paul thing. Let's get on to some new material and start learning again. Boy, what fun it's been. I mean, I'm translating a pretty dire message. But it's still fun.
Fairly dire. I'll give you that.
You know, but it's only dire in a way, man.
In ancient Greece, they'd have killed you for bringing a message.
Oh, well,
you
know, yeah, but there's aspects of this message that are really cool. I mean, Kirk called in. I'm sure Kirk is listening, and Kirk's calls to Shattering Myths are spectacular. I just love it when I bring such a smile on my face when I see Kirk's name on the switchboard. But, you know, Kirk at the end was talking about how he was reading this and, you know, how it just gives you shivers. And I know that the message is dark as to what man is going to do to himself, but there's something spectacular about having Yahweh's nature, his credibility, constantly reinforced. And there's even this sense, and I think this is what Kirk was trying to say. It's what I'm trying to say now at this point. Okay, I get it already. And that's what Kirk says. I get it already. I know who Yahweh is. I know Yahweh. I love Yahweh. I understand what he's offering. I trust and rely on what he is offering. And I just love spending time with him and enjoy his Torah. I get it. I love it. I'm there. That said, the more he goes out of his way to be extremely detailed in proving not only that he authored this material, but and that he can be trusted, and that he is always consistent, the more comfortable I am. Because when I read, for example, that he ripped Paul to shreds in Chabaouk and called him not only listed all of Paul's disgusting attributes, but called him the plague of death and called him out by name, brought a huge smile to my face, because you would think that a loving father would go out of his way to warn us about the most disgusting man who ever lived. And he did.
And he did.
And,
yeah.
You know, when I'm watching this war in Syria and seeing the United States and Russia spar against each other over it, and this mass killing, and recognize that what happened here is going to be the same aftermath of the great jihad in Afghanistan, where the terrorists are going to come back and they're going to perpetrate great acts of terror in every country in the world. And I recognize the United States is trying to tear Israel to ribbons. If God didn't tell us that that was going to happen and warn us that that was going to happen and then tell us that his children are going to be rescued from it, then he wouldn't be the kind of loving father that I've come to know. And the fact that he has done it, and that yeah, we've come to know the truth, but nobody has an excuse. He has made it as clear, as blunt, as he has proven the case over and over again. No one has an excuse. He's done what we expected him to do. And, you know, Kirk, if I'm misquoting you here, I'm sorry, but I thought that's what you were conveying. That's what I look at Yeshaya 17 and 18. I don't see the, yes, I know that it's man's going to do horrible things, and it's going to be a horrendous period. But what I see there is the Father that I've come to love. What I see there is God doing everything he can to reach out to everyone, to prove who he is, and to tell us that, you know, when I asked you to walk away from Babylon as the first requirement of the covenant, this is why. This is why.
Is that Kirk on the line? Somebody is on the line.
We've got a person from the 954 and the 720 on the line. And a lot of times people. Oh, hi, William. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing, Yada?
You know, we've made it all the way through the one statement from Psalm 119 again. We're on a consistent roll.
Well, welcome back. You sound recharged.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. It was a wonderful time because this vacation was the first one in a very long time where I've had both of my sons join my wife and I, and it's the first time we've ever been on a vacation with our eldest son's wife. They got married just shy of a year ago, and so we had our daughter-in-law and our both sons with us, and we rented a house on the Big Island and blew bubbles at fishes because we all like to scuba dive. We all like to play golf, so we went off and played golf. We had ate some really wonderful meals overlooking some beautiful beaches, and it was just good quality family time. Rode bikes and took walks and sat in the sun and chatted.
Out there roughing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. I expect to do a lot of that with you guys. I'm not going to just go and be a scientific discovery guy. I'm kind of looking forward to, you know, I might get to scuba dive without having to wear the wetsuit and without having to wear the regulator. But I'm kind of looking forward to all that stuff.
Yeah, that'll be pretty nice. I get
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so same here. Well, I actually called because I have a question for you.
Okay.
Well, you know, I want to say hi to you guys as well and the family. Everybody's listening. I think SDR tried to get on before.
Okay.
But he didn't get in, so call back, SDR. But
yeah.
Anyways, my question was in regards to the shroud. I heard you talking about it on SM a few days ago, and
yeah.
I was trying to find a passage in Yeshayahu where it speaks of Yahusha being beaten to the point where he couldn't even tell he was human anymore.
Right. Yeah, the grub.
Right, but that you know, silhouette or whatever in that shroud seems to be pretty, you know, pretty distinguishable. I mean, it looks...
Well, there are parts of it that are distinguishable. You know, there's blood clots and marring of the face. For example, there's a knot on his nose that is really fairly significant, and there's clearly blood all through, streaked all through the upper forehead and through the hair. But if you look at the back of the shroud, it's a bloody pulp.
Okay.
Now also keep in mind that the nature of the burial process was that if someone was as badly wounded as he was, the very first thing they do is they take water and sponges and cleaning aid, and they try to do the best they can to clean the body before then they put flowers over the body, and then they wrap the body in the white linen.
Okay.
So,
has anybody watched The Passion of Christ?
I saw it. I hated it, but I saw it.
It was pretty graphic in the beating. That's why.
The beating was graphic. Of course, they have Satan as this woman that lurks around, and the problem with the Passion of the Christ is that the story for that is based upon a Catholic nun claimed to have a vision of what happened that day, and much of the story is based upon her special vision, and that's why she calls it it's called the Passion of the Christ. And Mel Gibson, who produced the movie, did so because he felt he owed a debt to the Roman Catholic Church. He was born with a fairly disfigured face, and I think was abandoned, and someone in the Roman Catholic Church took pity on him, helped him surgically, and helped raise him, and so he felt a debt to the Roman Catholic Church and decided to produce a movie on the nun's personal revelation. And there's enormous aspects of it that are untrue. It's also interesting to see the Roman Catholic Church's fixation on they don't know his name, so I'm going to use the name that they use because they've got a fictitious character. They're Jesus Christ. At two aspects of his life. They want him dependent on his mother in his mommy's arms, Madonna and Child, and that's about half of their depictions of it. The other times you see him in any time in a statue or an engraving or a picture, he is nailed to a Roman and pagan cross, and so he's helpless, and he at that point. And he needs those Roman Catholic priests to do his bidding because he's up there nailed to the cross. He's dying, and so the Roman Catholic depiction is just so pathetic. It's so ghoulish. It's so inconsistent with the life of the eternal and everlasting God.
Well, if you understand about Yeshua anyway, if you watch that, I'm looking back and just the what the Sadducees and the Pharisees were doing to him anyway, because he was standing up, right? You know, it was horrible. That's just the gist of what I got out of it, because he was standing up for, you know, the Torah and stuff, and so.
Yeah, and the only way you're going to know that is, of course, to actually know him and to know him from the perspective of the Torah, which you would never know if you were just exposed to the movie. But I would grant you that it is true that if you know who Yahusha really is, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, and that he came to enable the promises of the covenant by fulfilling the first four Moed Mikre, Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, and Shavuah. And if you know that, and if you know that he is the living word of Yahweh and that Yahweh is anti-religious, then to the degree that the movie depicts what the eyewitness accounts say, to that extent, then you can see truth manifest before your eyes.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
What that requires, of course, is the ultimate lie detector. Yahweh has given us the perfect lie detector. You were able to use it, and so you were able to distance yourself from the lies of the movie and see the truth, because the lie detector that Yahweh has provided us with is the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
If you benefit from the Torah, If you were educated by the Torah, if you're guided by the Torah, ain't nobody can deceive you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's
so
what
you're
supposed
to figure out. I was like Will calling in for a question.
Yes,
so,
go ahead.
Nineveh, when it was talking about Jonah being sent to Nineveh, and so then in there it states that he was sent there because there was 124,000 men that didn't know their right hand from their left hand. Did you come across that? Do you have any understanding in why he would have said that they don't know their right hand from their left hand?
Okay, what I'm going to do here is just speak a little bit about, you're talking about the, first of all, I apologize, I got an interruption just as you were asking that question. A lot of things going on right at the moment. So, I know you mentioned Nineveh and people not knowing their right hand from their left hand. Who was it that made the statement?
The statement was made. I don't know. It's in when they make the account for Jonah or Yonah when he was sent to Nineveh.
All right. So that's what I thought. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. So and I haven't translated all of Yonah. I translated the portions of Yonah that were applicable to understanding, you know, what the whale represents, which is the spirit of Yahweh, how Yonah's name applies in this case, and how the experience of Yonah was identical to the experience of Yahusha when he came into Jerusalem on Preparation Day, and then I returned on Friday to celebrate Pesach, and then didn't leave until he is seen leaving Jerusalem, the heart of the land, on the road to Emmaus. And so, there's probably three chapters of Yonah that that I translated and therefore am really familiar with. The mission to Nineveh, of course, was the ultimate mission of hope, which is Yonah obviously knew Yahweh, protected by Yahweh, loved Yahweh, and so Yahweh was interested in sending a representative to what was probably the most important city in the world on that day. Nineveh was the capital of Assyria. And so this would be like sending someone to New York City or Washington, D.C. Today. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Most important city, most influential city in the world at the time. The world superpower at the time. And Yahweh wanted them to know the truth. Thought it would be a good idea to send his most able spokesperson to tell them the truth. My suspicion is that he did it not only because Yah wants us to know the truth, but beyond that, God does have a timeline, and when you deal with world superpowers, they can get off, they can do some stuff that would be, America could detonate nuclear bombs all over the place and raise havoc with Yah's timeline. So there are certain things that God's got to keep at pace. And at the time, Assyria was the bad boy on the planet, the world superpower. And there was a role for Assyria. They were going to take out the northern kingdom, in exactly as Yahweh had foretold. And then, God also foretold that Assyria would fall to Babylon. But so he wanted a throttling mechanism with Assyria. And so he sent his most credible, most articulate spokesperson. He sent his Larry to Nineveh to give them both barrels. And the view in Nineveh is that they just thought they were the, it's like sending somebody to Washington and talking with a politician. They think that they're really special. They think they understand that they can carry the day, that they are really important. And and just as God, speaking to Yisraelites, when Yisraelites thought that they were the most literate people in the world and that they were the source, God's messengers, and therefore they were the most important writers in the world, God says, as far as I'm concerned, you're blind. You can't see. In fact, you got the blind leading the blind. You think that you're the most literate people in the world, but I'm telling you, You're blind, and you've got the blind leading the blind. So here is now the nation that considers itself the most able, the most capable, the most empowered, the America of that time, and he's saying, your right hand doesn't know what your left hand is doing. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you're just a bunch of bumbling fools.
I kind of took it as there was a reason for that, because he only mentioned 124,000 men there that didn't know their right hand, and for some reason he wanted to spare those people, those men.
Yeah.
It's kind of the mindset I got on it.
Yeah. There is a difference throughout Yah's testimony between the right hand and the left hand. In fact, right, as it would be, is tied into Sadak. And those who are on the covenant are on the right hand of God. Those who are pushed away are on the left side. And so there is a polarization throughout the Torah of right versus left. And now he's not taking, somebody might be left-handed here. It's not saying that you as a left-handed person are inferior in any way. But God is very clear that he views right and right hand and being right and being upright, all of those things are combined together from God's perspective. So being right, being on the right hand, relying on the right hand of Yahweh, is the preferred position, where it's the left hand that pushes away.
Yeah, I think he was saying they don't know good from bad. You know, if they can't tell the right from the left.
I was kind of thinking that too. So if there's 124,000 in the city that didn't know good from bad, that would be really a reason to go spare those people, because they haven't been defiled or corrupted.
Yeah, I guess you could also take it from the point, you know, there's two ways to look at this. One is that here's the world superpower, and you know, they're claiming the power, hand and power were synonymous in the Torah and prophets. It's always the case when Yod is mentioned, it means power, capability, ability. And so here's the most able nation on earth, and he's saying you don't know your right from your left. Now, so that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is that as you're looking at it, and both are possible, and both are likely, which is that there were some people in Nineveh that were learned, that wanted to know, but had no access to knowing the difference between right and wrong, who to trust and who not to trust. And so Yahweh said, because there's some people that are open-minded, that want to know, but don't currently know, I'm going to send my knowingest guy, the smartest dude I know, I'm going to send him to help them.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, they did repent, didn't they?
Yeah. They did.
One of the only nations that ever did, actually.
They did. For in fact, benefited for a good long time. I suspect both of those are true. What do you think?
Mm-hmm, I think so, too. So there's one more last part to that question of that issue with Jonah or Yonah.
Yeah, Yonah.
When Yeshua made a reference and he said there won't be any sign given except for the sign of Jonah. So even when he made all the references to the earthquakes and all of that stuff.
Be careful. Yeah. Always context. Who's he talking to?
He was talking to the Sadducees and Pharisees.
You got it. And when they asked, who was it that asked him for a sign?
Pardon, I didn't hear that.
Who asked him for the sign?
Well,
The Sadducees and the Pharisees were asking him for the sign. And so what he says is for you. The only sign I'm going to give you is the sign of Yonah, and spoke of the 3 days and the three nights. And for them,
they knew that.
They absolutely. And so he came into the heart of the land, into Jerusalem, to celebrate Passover on Thursday night. He was there Thursday night. He was there all day Friday as the Passover lamb. He was there Friday night, departing into with his body still there, but his soul in Sheol.
Sheol.
And he doesn't leave until he's shown on the road to Emmaus on late afternoon, on just before dinner time, on the first day of the week. So he's there from Thursday afternoon, Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, and there finally on Sunday afternoon, he's gone 3 full days, 3 full nights, right? Mm-hmm. That was the sign that he gave to them, and the only sign that he was willing to give to the Sadducees and the Pharisees.
So do you think, I know...
So the answer to your question is, he didn't say that was the only sign that he was giving to the world at large, because he had given the world at large 1,000 signs. He just said, you morons that are antagonizing me here, that's the sign I'm going to give you and the only one I'm going to give you. And by the way, you know, when you talk to religious pastors, they don't get it. When I, you know, conversation with Jerry Falwell, for example, and he's trying to understand it, and he looks at this passage and he says, you know, that means that the crucifixion had to take place on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's where they do. They start changing days. They don't get the Moed Mikra.
They don't get it. They start changing the days. They just don't get. They don't get it at all. And so it's for the same thing. He says, you know, okay, for you religious morons, here you go. Here's your sign. You know, blue collar, whatever they call it, comedy. You know, like one of the guys says, here's your sign. You know, that's what I see when Yosha says, okay, here's your sign. You are really stupid.
So, you know, on the other ones, when he gave the disciples this sign, then it goes, oh, there'll be earthquakes and food shortages and
all of it,
and all that in the last thing.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I ponder the thought that it isn't that necessarily that Yahweh is doing those things. It's
that
the adversary, which is man, it has been able to manipulate things so that he can, because he has the same book that we do. He has the playbook just like, you know,
Yahweh. You know, I think that when Yahweh conceived the extraordinarily complex equation to create the universe and the earth in it. He created the earth to have a specific life cycle that would play out in exactly the timeline that of 6 + 1 = 7. And so the asteroid that's going to strike us, the earthquakes that are going to occur, all of this, the earth finally saying, the pestilence, and finally the, you know, the earth saying, I can't do this anymore. I think all of that was put into the original equation and just playing out exactly as he planned it. I think God is the ultimate mathematician, and it was put into the original calculation. God isn't making any of those things happen. They're going to happen. Most of it is man's doing. The pestilence, for example, is man's doing, and the famine is man's doing, and the war is man's doing, and the terrorism is man's doing, that are all listed there. But the earthquakes, the tsunamis, that sort of thing, that is the calculation that he put into the universe. I think he knew that Apophis was going to strike us midway through the tribulation before he even finished creation.
Yeah, what happens is that when Christianity and the Christendom perceive those things happening as if they are acts, literal acts that, you know, Yahweh's doing.
No,
to.
They aren't. Yeah, they are.
But most Christianity does perceive it that way.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but they see prophecy in that light as well. They don't realize he's a being of pure energy. That's, you know, he's reporting what he's seen. He's not guessing or making it happen. You know.
Yeah, but your comment is it's the troubling part of Christianity. The Christian God, who doesn't really exist as a God, is a micromanager. He's involved in every aspect of the Christian's life, pray without ceasing. It's God's will if they fail. It's God's will if they succeed. If they score the touchdown, it's because God wanted them to score the touchdown and give God credit for the home run. Their God is involved in everything. A person dies, God wanted them. A person lives, God saved them. And so a natural extension of that is that everything that God said is going to be calamitous during the tribulation, and preceding the tribulation would be an act of God. When Hagee wrote 4 Blood Moons, he said it's the hand of God that is causing these moons to do this. It has nothing to do with the ordinary orbits and cycles of the sun and the moon and the planet Earth. He has it as the hand of God changing all of this just to create this sign. That's not Yahweh. That's not who he is. That's not what he does. As a matter of fact, that's why I love this statement in the midst of the harvest before the Magog war becomes this terrible war on Israel. God says, as for me, I'm going to hang out in heaven with my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for answering those questions and everybody
sure.
else for listening. Thank you.
Hey,
yeah.
Who is Thanks. This on the phone, by the way?
It's Diane from Denver.
Diane.
Yeah, hi, Diane.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought it was.
Hi, Larry.
Diane asked great questions on the Shattering Myth shows, many of whom I'm not very good at answering, but... You do ask great questions.
That's a thought provoking question. I mean, but a religious deity. Just think of the fearsome religious deity.
Yeah.
They have to be involved in everything.
Yeah,
they pick the winners and losers in wars.
Oh yeah,
they're
manipulating everything through their prophets and their priests and it's why the Benny Hinn has to prove his worth by fake healings.
In reality, I think he admits that he's a total fraud.
No, he does. He does, privately. Yeah, not publicly, but privately. Absolutely.
Sure.
Complete fraud. Yeah, I mean, not how you even live with yourself under those circumstances, but they do. And, I remember telling Jerry Falwell, I said, you've got this all wrong. You're celebrating Christmas, it's a pagan holiday. You're celebrating Easter, it's completely pagan. You're gathering people together on Sunday in complete defiance of God's instructions. You're calling this fellow Jesus Christ, and you don't even know his name. And you refer to Yahweh as the Lord.
He believed you, didn't he?
What's wrong with you? Don't you know that the covenant hasn't been renewed? Don't you know that God invited us to meet with him 7 times a year, and you're not meeting with him any one of those days? You know, what you're saying here... and telling people is completely wrong. And his response is, yeah, of course, I know it is. But, if I were to say this, there would be no one sitting in my pews. And if I were to say this, these letters that come in that fund this university would cease coming in. And if you were to say this, they're going to label you a kook.
I got to ask you, how did you feel at that moment? Like, what was going through your mind right then and there?
I knew enough, because this was now 12 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. I knew enough at that time to say, my suspicion was right, that Christian preachers know the truth, and they're not misguided. They are misguiding. And I suspected that was true. And so Jerry, who, by the way, was a really nice fella. I mean, what a warm and engaging guy. But here, the central aspect of his mission he knew was a lie. And he reinforced that. So that part of it was reassurance. Part of it was a disbelief. The sense of jaw dropping to your chest. Why would you be so blunt as to acknowledge this and then devote your life to what you say is representing God and you know you're misrepresenting it? Why would you do that? And then the third aspect was, and this was the strongest of all of them, is I had really come to know and like this man. I probably spent several thousand hours with him one-on-one. I mean, we really became good friends. I came to really like the man. And so... my goal was to complete Yada Yah before his ministry was over so that I could take Yada Yah to him and say, Jerry, very few people, maybe no one on earth is in a better position to articulate this truth. You have the platform. You have your own television show. You have your own television channel. You have your own university. Take this. Go with it. Share this with the world. I mean, if you were to come and say, I was wrong, this is right, just think of the enormous impact it would have. So much more powerful than a guy like me trying to do it, for crying out loud. And that's what I wanted most of all. And he died before I got it done. That was so. William, that's, that answers your question. How did I feel? I don't think there was a day that went by as I was discovering and writing yada yada that I didn't think of, oh my, if I could only get my friend Jerry to read this, to consider it, to share it. And the sadness I had when he died before I got it done. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure any of those are the right responses, but that's how I felt.
Well, I've always said that I think that preachers, especially those in positions of power, I think they're either agnostic or atheists. I really believe that. Look, I had a good friend. He was a preacher of the largest Church of Christ in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And he had 12 elders, and 6 of them were lawyers. Said he felt like a guy in between two rocks. Kerry Knights, isn't he? Kerry ended up going out and becoming an actor, okay?
Yeah.
And for 10 years, and this is back in the 80s, they were paying him $150,000 a year,
sure,
paying for his house, everything.
Because he was articulate.
Well, yeah, he was very articulate.
Entertaining.
He was entertaining. He even got me into some movies. I got to play a bad guy in an FBI film one time. But they went out and he said that he didn't believe a word of it. He said by the time he left, it was garbage in, garbage out.
My wife was just enamored with a, and this was before I started writing yada yada, but was enamored with a preacher in Palm Springs that had a mega church in Palm Springs, and he was so entertaining and so fun and so full of life, so charismatic, that every time we were in Palm Springs, we'd try to go to Palm Springs, so we'd be there every weekend and go to this guy's church. We couldn't go to it. We got the tape of his sermon. And my wife would play them over and over again. Just love this guy. And one time the guy asked if, when we moved back to Charlottesville, if he could come, he and his wife, and stay a week with us. Oh, my wife was so excited to have, he and his wife there. And they show up and they want to be swingers. They want to do a swap.
Yeah, you had mentioned that. What did your wife think of that?
Oh, she was just horrified.
Whoa.
Just looked like, I don't know,
they were
able to disinfect the upstairs bedroom that she put him in for that one night before she shoot him out of the house. My wife is really straight-laced when it comes to this sort of thing. She is a paragon of morality.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing you spring on the wife. I got to tell you.
Oh, my. But she, thank God she was the one that arranged this. Otherwise, I'd have been in the doghouse. But no. That's what they wanted to do, was to swing. I think that's what they call it, right? We exchange spouses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
little wife swapping over the weekend, huh? Yeah.
No, we're not swingers.
Yeah,
but there's an example, a guy, complete fraud.
Yeah, Kerry was dating his secretary, and he was married. I mean, it just got insane.
Yeah.
He said it was outrageous. The whole thing was outrageous.
Yeah,
you know what finally got him?
The amount of
sexual
abuse between pastors and their congregation is gargantuan.
What finally got him was there was this little poor preacher over in Ireland. The guy wore the same dirty shirt he said every day. And he went over and he said, you know, we should help this guy. We should give him money. And they cut the guy back to like $200 a month, and he quit. He said, this is just insane. The whole thing's insane. I live a movie star lifestyle, and I show him this guy that's been in this area for hundreds of years. He's fighting the Catholic Church. You know, as far as they were concerned, they had the truth, you know. And here he is trying to get the truth out to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's the guy that gets cut. And so Kerry said it.
Yeah, I know. It is genuinely amazing.
Yeah.
Well, my friends, my wife is still in town because of our return from our vacation. And I'm going to go take her out to dinner. I am going to good night. I'm going to, as I say, I'm going to go and have a nice dinner with my wife, and happy as a clam. I had a great time tonight, by the way. So I want to thank you, Diane and William and Larry. You are just you were really fun to do this with. I had a marvelous time, and I want to thank you for it.
All right,
well,
you
all
have a good night. Wife.
Yeah,
all right, guys.
Good
night, Diane.
You know, one of the things that Yamek's really clear is that family and marriage are really important. And so I prioritize mine, and I'm a happy man when I do.
That's right, buddy.
Yeah. And I know, William, that's a huge part of your life, is this family. And so, you know, it's the right thing to do. And when my wife is happy, I'm happy.
And four.
Yeah. So. We're gonna take her
well, go ahead and have fun, buddy.
Okay.
Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.